Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast from The Sober Club. I'm Genuinely Grace, and this is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. We'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there's inspiration from quitlet authors, experts, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you've had a good week. There's been a lot of stuff in the press, hasn't there, this week, popping up about alcohol and various... I'm here saying there's been masses on why alcohol is good for you. Interestingly enough, it's not been like that this week. There was a piece saying would-be dads shouldn't drink for 6 months. That was an interesting piece. They say that women... I've long been advised to stop drinking during pregnancy, but research published suggests that the risks for unborn children are greater than thought, and they apply to both fathers and mothers and start before pregnancy even begins. So they're saying here that scientists found that binge drinking, 5 or more drinks in a single sitting in the 3 months before conception, raised the risk of congenital heart disease for children. Mothers drinking increased the risk by 16%, and for fathers, it went up to 52%. Isn't that interesting? So I guess we've always known that if you want to conceive, then ditch the toxins. But don't know how many dads have come along with that in the past, but that's an interesting piece. And then the big story that was across lots of newspapers was about the baby boomers. That'll be me then. Baby boomers arriving the young as problem boozers. I mean, I think we know this. It's interesting to see it actually laid out in print. They say baby boomers on course to overtake young people. Hospital admissions for mental disorders linked to alcohol have surged by a fifth among the middle-aged in the past 5 years, according to NHS Digital. And there's been an 11% increase in the number of over 60s admitted for addiction, memory loss and dementia linked to drinking. And then among the younger groups, those aged 15 to 40, admissions have fallen. So we know, don't we, that a lot of younger people are a bit brighter than my generation and they're drinking a lot less. It is still part of their lives, I think, but very much the parents' generation and the grandparents. It's such an interesting thing, and this link to mental health particularly is something that the more I read about it, the more I look into this, it's so prevalent, and I just didn't realize it. It's really interesting. I know I've said before on this podcast that I didn't used to particularly consider myself as a particularly anxious person. I didn't necessarily label myself like that at all, and it's only when I stopped drinking that I suddenly felt released from this anxiety that I actually hadn't realised that I even had. I thought it was normal to feel that way. And I now know that, I said it in my TEDx talk, alcohol steals your joy. It really does. It numbs everything out, and it numbs down the feelings of happiness, if you like. And as time goes on, you get more and more of this chemical, effectively, this kind of brain chemistry, so that you are literally not able to find the joy and the happiness in the things that used to bring you joy and happiness. And it's true, isn't it? Because as time goes on and the more you're drinking, if you're drinking daily, even if you used to have fun drinking, then suddenly you get to a point where it's not even that isn't fun anymore. And I do think it's interesting the way it kind of just takes away joy. I had a conversation with somebody the other day in the Sober Club, and it's a picture of kind of sadness and depression, and yet you can see there's so much hope there, so much potential, incredible potential when the alcohol is taken, out of the equation. It's amazing. The other thing that I've spoken about a lot on this podcast is this concept, if you like, of self-esteem, self-love, being kind to yourself. And again, I've said several times that I was steeped in that world, absolutely steeped in that world, talking about self-love the whole time, particularly being a Hay House author. It's part of my world. And yet I never felt it for myself until I was able to ditch the booze. And then suddenly I kind of got it. It became possible to start to feel that way. And linked with all of that, of course, comes the whole issue of being confident in your body and being, you know, feeling that sense of self-esteem. And for many women particularly, I'm sure it is similar for some men, but certainly for women, we have many women have a lot of issues around body confidence. One of the things I so hope for my own daughter is that she won't have to go through that awful kind of matching yourself up against photoshopped images that are absolutely everywhere. I think there's an element, quite a high element of the younger generation that are quite bright in that respect, and they can see that pictures have been photoshopped. But in this kind of selfie generation, it can be really difficult, and the pressure on everyone to look a certain way is absolutely immense. So to that end, I have a fantastic guest this week. My guest is Harriet Whaley-Cohen, and we've interviewed Harriet before on the podcast a while ago, and I really wanted to interview her again. She has such a fascinating story, as you'll hear, and particularly the work that she's doing at the moment around encouraging people towards body confidence and towards self-esteem. So her event, I think, is aimed at women, but the messages in this podcast are absolutely, in this interview, absolutely relevant to men just as much as to women. When the interview is finished, obviously, I'll come back and remind you of our event. I'll just tell you now, just in case you're thinking of disappearing. Please don't miss out on this event. It's Monday, 28th of October. I know it's pain getting to London on a Monday, but it's going to be such a great event. It is at Hello Love, which is this little studio cafe, a kind of art studio and vegan cafe in central London in Bloomsbury. Funky place. It's part of their non-toxic breast cancer awareness month. They've got some fabulous artwork in there. There's been some pop-up exhibitions. Stella McCartney has done stuff in there. There's a whole bunch of things going on through October, and this is kind of right at the end of it, really, our Sober Curious event, and I'm going to be speaking there, and my guest is Claire Pooley, author of The Sober Diaries. As many of you know, Claire had her own diagnosis of breast cancer when she was some months into sobriety, so she's really got an interesting take on all of this. The evening is you're welcome to come if you're a man or a woman, if you are already sober, or if you're thinking you might be interested, or if you would just like to hear what we have to say. It really is open to everyone. The title is Are You Sober Curious? But it's open to everyone. we'll tailor the evening for the audience that we have. I think tickets are £15. It's free for those with cancer. And all of the profits go to the charity, the Hello Beautiful Foundation. And your ticket includes a free mocktail courtesy of Sensor Spirits. So these are amazing alcohol-free, plant-based spirits, in inverted commas. The real story behind this brand, really, really lovely brand. So check them out. That's Sensor Spirits. And it would just be fantastic to see some of you guys there. Do put that one in your diary, Monday, 28th of October. And right now, Harriet Whaley-Cohen, enjoy the interview. My guest is Harriet Whaley-Cohen. Harriet, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I know I spoke to you, it was quite a while ago now, wasn't it? But thank you for coming back. And will you just remind people, sort of, I know you do lots of things, you wear quite a few hats, but just remind people of your main stuff that you do, because you've got some really interesting things going on.
Thank you. So, well, I'm just going to describe my vision, because I think that explains it better than anything. And my vision is, imagine a world where it doesn't occur to women that they or their bodies aren't good enough, where they know, accept and celebrate their true value.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, that really is a vision, isn't it? And quite hard to imagine, let's be really honest about it.
It's shocking, but it's so hard to imagine. Mm. And so I did declare war earlier this year on the not good enough epidemic. I really think that so many of the world's problems are down to women not feeling good enough, and the structures that are in place and the things that keep us down, and even the ways we keep ourselves down. And I also do know and feel that how we feel about our bodies is really central to this.
Yeah, totally. So let me just ask a little bit about your background, because I know you've been sober for many years, and that's kind of underpinned everything. Just tell us a little bit about that, and then just some of the hard stuff that's happened to you, because you're not exactly without your fair share of stuff going down.
Well, no, exactly. I have been described actually as a warrioress who, no matter what,
bounces back.
Yeah, just gets up from the battlefield and keeps going.
Yeah. Is it 16 years of sobriety for you?
It's actually 17 years on the 1st of October.
Wow. Oh, that's interesting. You still remember the date and do you still celebrate?
Absolutely.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, it's important to mark it, actually. Really, really important. Mm. Yeah.
So tell us about the other stuff then, because you had, we should say that you're, a really fit and healthy person, and that's part of the work that you do.
Yeah.
But you had a car accident. Was it a car accident?
Yes, it was. Yeah. I was sort of minding my own business on the motorway in 2016, and the traffic had come to a standstill, and the person coming up behind us hadn't noticed that the traffic had stopped. I don't know what they were doing. They said they were looking at their sat nav, but whatever, and smashed into the back of the car. And as a result of that, I had all sorts of injury and difficulties, and I have what appears to be a permanent pain condition in my head and neck that is very limiting, because if I get tired or I get stressed, my pain levels shoot up. There's a lot of different activities that I can't do. And that's one of the things I've learned really in sobriety, is that a drink or doing something destructive will not make anything easier. It might just depress things for a bit, but you have to face things head on. And I think that's probably has been my hardest challenge in sobriety. The hardest thing to deal with is when you're minding your own business and then your life gets radically altered in a single moment.
Yeah.
And it's 100% not your fault, but it's just been thrust upon you, basically.
Yes.
And just dealing with that and the feelings around it, and at times, real depression, especially around a year. It was probably maybe a year to 18 months after it happened, when the doctors started saying I might never get better. The grief, I did an awful lot the first few years in terms of seeking treatment to try and get better. I just really wanted to get better, working, when in hindsight maybe I wouldn't have done, I would have rested more, but it is what it is, and now it's almost part of my identity. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I am a person who lives with permanent pain but still faces life head on.
And you're incredibly positive, and that's what we're going to go on to talk about, the fact that that you're really, you're doing amazing work inspiring us all, and certainly inspiring women to, as you say, to love themselves as they are, the body confidence thing that you talk about is absolutely amazing. But tell me as well, have you got a dog? Is the dog joining in? I've got a dog joining in on the
podcast.
Hello. Yeah, we should take a leaf out of the book of animals. They don't care. They just don't care, right? tell us about what happened to you at the end of last year then, because, while you're already living in pain and just back coping with that, tell us about the next bit.
So the next bit, I'm going to try and distract her with something else. I'm so sorry. I never thought, I actually segregated my children to a different part of the house.
You didn't realise the dog would want to be part of the podcast.
that's what sobriety is all about, isn't it? You've got to rock with whatever's going on in your life and just not let it faze you too much. Mm. So having come to terms with my body and its injured form, and having previously come to terms with my body and its post-parent, post growing two babies form, and all the ways that you change as you get older, then coming to terms with injuries, last autumn I was told that I had very early stage breast cancer, or as I prefer to use the language, that there was a lot of very cheeky cancer cells trying to make home in my body, and although there was a lot of them, I think there's something like a 27 or 30 square centimeter area. It hadn't yet become invasive. It was at the very last stage before it does.
Yeah.
So I was really, really lucky in that I only had to have a mastectomy, and I had simultaneous reconstruction, but I didn't need radiotherapy or chemotherapy. Thank goodness.
Mm. Yeah.
Her nose on the table now because she wants her snake. She's trying to lighten up the conversation. And you know, because the reconstruction was done with my tummy, I sort of got a free tummy tuck with my breast cancer.
That's a way to look at it.
Yeah. But I now have a kind of hip to hip scar. Mm. That brought with it, that was much longer to heal.
Yeah,
the surgery than the actual breast part, where they did it in a skin sparing way, which is where they sort of scoop out all the tissue from the inside but leave the skin on the outside, basically. And I had to come to terms with that, and I sort of reached a place of compassion, love, and acceptance, but I didn't feel fabulous and gorgeous and sexy yet.
Yeah.
And I think that's been one of my biggest struggles since the car crash, actually, was thinking, well, I can accept this, even though it's awful, but I really felt it had a big influence on how attractive I was.
Yeah.
It's quite hard to feel sexy when your body hurts and you're worried about moving and where everything hurts. And I think that the breast cancer on top definitely had an impact in that way, and I had to really work every single tool that I know and that I've taught and create or find out about new ones to come to terms with my body. And just things like I lost my nipple because the cells were right up to it, so they couldn't save that.
Yeah.
And so I had a circle of skin that they'd moved from my tummy. And it's just things that you don't realize. And I hope this isn't too graphic, but tummy skin is actually a completely different color to breast skin. And so I had kind of a boob that was slightly different to the other boob. I now joyfully call them old boob and new boob. Plus this circle of skin with a great big scar around it. And what I decided to do was not to have any more medical reconstruction, because they can make you a fake nipple and they can tattoo a nipple around it, but that's quite invasive. And they do it under a local anesthetic, which sounded really traumatic.
Yeah.
And they also can just do a 3D tattoo of a picture of a nipple. And I started thinking, well, if I'm going to have a picture, why don't I have a picture of something else? Oh, and Fizzy's obviously agreeing. She's squeaking. She actually climbed on the table and got squeaky snake back. She agrees. And I did a lot of research, and I found out about this incredible guy in Chicago who specializes in this, in post-mastectomy tattoos, whether you've had reconstruction or not. Right. And his artwork is completely different to... Wow. Anything else out there. And I reached out to him, and I had to send an application that included photos. It's that, what? I'm sending a strange man.
Picture my boob.
What if this is all a hoax? He accepted me. And then miraculously, he was over here for some other work, and he was scheduled to appear on national television. And he asked me if I would come and have my tattoo done live on national television.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So it was all very short notice as well. One minute I was on holiday with the kids, and that holiday was about to come to an end. And the next minute I'd come home, repacked, dashed up to London, and having my boob tattooed live on national television. But it completely revolutionized how I felt.
Amazing. I mean, what's great about this, you know, is we hear of lots of coaches and specialists or whatever who are telling us all, men and women, you know, that we should have more confidence, and that we should sort of be grateful for our body and all the rest of it. But there's often a case of you kind of look at them and you kind of go, yeah, it's all right for you to say, you know, you happen to be, you know, sort of naturally, totally, incredibly perfect. And, you know, there's all that kind of feeling that goes on. And, you know, with you, clearly you literally have been there, done it, got the t-shirt, right?
So
you've been through, you know, got the tattoo, and you know, it didn't drive you to drink, you know, because that's the other thing, isn't it? As we say, when, you know, I mean, I'm always keen to point out on this podcast that stopping drinking is the beginning, and yes, there are a myriad incredible benefits, but it doesn't necessarily mean that crap stuff doesn't happen. And then you've got to know how to deal with that, because you can't turn to the bottle. It's not going to be the answer, is it, ever?
No, and I do think actually that's one of the reasons why I've healed well is because through the surgery, through everything, is because I've been deeply conscious with my body. So when it was hurting in hospital, or when you needed to put another line in and my arm didn't want to play ball, I would just send so much love and kindness to my body. A bit like as if I was looking after a small child who was like, Mummy, my tummy hurts, you know, they've cut me open. And I would just send love and say, I'm so sorry it hurts. I love you. I'm here for you. Thank you so much for what you've done, and just really offer a lot of reassurance. And it helped a lot with the pain.
Yeah.
And I'm one of only 5% or 10% of people who have that exact surgery who don't end up with massive water retention issues. It's not water. It's called
edema, is it?
Yeah, something like that. Where they have to put massive drains in and everything. And the doctors were all slightly amazed with why I was healing so well. And things like when they needed to put a line in, I would meditate, talk to my arm and say, look, I know that you're already purple with bruises. However, the rest of my body really needs whatever it is. And would you mind terribly, please? And just ask very nicely. And then I would wait. And when I felt that I got a yes from my arm, I would say, right, it's okay now. And then they would just get the line in straight away. And they'd be like, what did you just do? But it's about that partnership, because that's the thing. When I was drinking and taking whatever else, I wasn't in partnership with myself at all. I was on self-destruct. There was no honouring going on. And I
totally
think
get that.
Having a great relationship with your body is a two-way thing, like any relationship. One person talks, the other one listens, you collaborate. And that's the space I'm in these days with my body. It's this mutually respectful, collaborative, listening, answering, honoring relationship. And I think
amazing.
That's the key.
So what's your message then for, you know, well, I mean, men and women who are, you know, there isn't this self-love. They're not at that point. They can't. I mean, I know for me, you know, this is very relevant for me, because I, you know, I used to talk about self-esteem and self-love all the time. I'm a Hay House author, for God's sake. There isn't anybody I haven't interviewed. You know, there's nothing I don't know about it on paper. But if you'd actually have asked me, you know, sort of in private, you know, how do you really feel about yourself? I'd have said, oh, well, you know, it doesn't apply to me. I saw myself as separate from all of that. Yeah. And I certainly didn't have any sense of self-love, not for me. And I now know, looking back, that the, you know, the alcohol was the obstacle there. It absolutely was the obstacle. And now that that's gone, I mean, it's a slow process, because, you know, I've had years of really not liking myself very much. But now that that's gone, at least I can see the path now, and that's amazing. So what would you say to people who really are still at that, I hate myself and I hate my body stage? Because it's frightening how many people feel like that. Frightening.
I know.
And young women too, really young women.
It creeps into every single area of life. It's so toxic. You know, how do you have a healthy romantic relationship when you feel like that? How do you have a successful career? How do you even choose a healthy breakfast? How do you put on great underwear that makes you feel good? How do you invest in yourself? Or it's just not compatible. And I think what I would say to these people is that, firstly, you're not alone. and it's not your fault that you feel that way. Don't shame the shame, right? And it's okay to talk about it. And in my experience, self-love is not the place that you reach in your head and in your heart first. The place that I got to was where I really understood, and this is one of the, at the core of my, what I teach, is that self-love is an action. It's not a state of mind. And if you behave towards yourself with love, and you just start with tentatively reaching out to yourself, and just showing small acts of love, you can repair that relationship. And you don't have to repair all of it at once. You can do a single grain of sand at a time. I think there's this idea that you've got to go from a self-loathing, secret self-loathing, to self-adoration.
By clicking your fingers
and saying a few mantras. And actually, it's an ongoing process. And like any relationship, there needs to be some consistency there, because if you show another person, you know, a couple of days you're really nice to them and really lovely to them, and then you're horrible to them, they're not going to trust you. And they're never going to know what they're going to get with you. So part of this action is accepting that it's consistent and that it's a slow process, but that you absolutely can. You can build self-love, you can build self-trust. And actually, the more that you do that, the more that doing something destructive, like drinking, becomes completely unthinkable.
Yeah.
Because you know it's not an act of love. In fact, it's an act of total destruction on yourself, because love is listening to how you feel. Love is listening to what your body wants.
Excellent. So tell us about the some of the work that you're doing then. I know you talk about the toxicity of perfection. That's such a great phrase. I mean, my website is imperfectly natural, and you've just taken that to the next level. It's a great phrase. And then you have these body confidence kind of workshops that you run. So tell us about the next one.
Well, I've got a retreat coming up, a one-day retreat called How to Love Your Body No Matter What. And that's on the 12th of October in central London. And it'll be intimate. There's limited spaces, because I think with this kind of work, you need to really feel very safe. And one of the things I'm really excited about is introducing the idea that not only can you liberate yourself from this prison of not liking your body, well, for whatever reason, it might be to do with looks, might be to do with illnesses, disabilities, injuries, anything. Could be to do with anything. It doesn't matter why you don't like your body. Everyone is welcome. But that not only can you get out of that cage and live in this brave new world of appreciating your body and accepting your body, you can actually start to see your body as a real instrument of pleasure and joy, because we have senses. We're meant to experience pleasure. It's part of what keeps us alive. We wouldn't have these senses if there wasn't a reason for them. And so there's going to be a big section on introducing pleasure, which I think is part of allowing your body to really shine and building that relationship and saying, wow, body, you are amazing. Oh my God, you allow me to listen to my favorite rock album, or you allow me to taste my favorite chocolate, or to whatever, touch some, you know, beautiful flowers or whatever it is. And that actually embracing that sensual, and I mean that in a sensorial even, way is incredibly empowering, and it's exciting. And also at some point we are going to set fire to the shame. We're going to set stuff on fire. And I'll be teaching people about forgiveness and all sorts of things. So it's going to be a really, really powerful day. And I know for people who've experienced that sort of workshop in the past, it's been utterly life-changing.
Transformational. Yeah, I can absolutely imagine that. Amazing. So we'll get your website in a moment. Just for anyone who is listening to this after the event, so, you know, can't make the workshop or somewhere else in the world, what would be your kind of one tip for them, really, just to make a start on this acceptance? You know, maybe they're a few months into ditching the booze, or possibly even a year or so. and yet there's this barrier, you know, as we've been talking about, there's this barrier, and there's still, we do find that a lot of people are still abusing, in inverted commas, themselves with the wrong food. And, you know, it's a process, isn't it? It can take a long time, you know, with the sugar and the goodness knows what else it is. So what would be your kind of top tips, if you like, for people who just need to make a gentle inroad, a gentle start into forgiving themselves and working with their body?
Yeah, I would ask yourself this question when it comes to getting dressed, it comes to choosing your food, comes to everything to do with your body, which is, what would love do? What would love do? What would love have you wear? What would love have you eat? It's just about shifting towards love. And you know what? Sometimes love is a whole tub of Ben and Jerry's. Sometimes that's destruction. Only you know. But if you come from that really loving motive, you can't go wrong. And I think it, treat yourself like a really small child that you're in charge of, who is crying out to be accepted and loved and nurtured rather than rejected.
Yeah, and so true. Such a good point. I think we might have said this when I interviewed you before, but you know, I one of the most powerful things that I ever heard was, I think it was Cheryl Richardson saying that she recognized that she, in the morning when she looked in the mirror, she was saying stuff in her head to herself, you know, oh, for God's sake, you look, you know, you've grown another wrinkle, you look old, you look fat, you look whatever it is. And she realized that if she'd said that out loud, you know, if there was a child in the room, she'd be had for abuse for saying that kind of stuff, you know. And it, really struck me and made me think, God, I bet that stuff's coming, would be in my head. Incredible. Yeah. And as you say, you know, if you think of yourself as a child, you wouldn't say that stuff out loud. It's such a good point.
Or even an adult, you wouldn't.
Well,
treat
yes, exactly. You wouldn't treat anyone. None of us would treat anyone else the way we treat ourselves. It's so true. Yeah. So I love that. What would love do? Love that. It's fantastic. So just give us your website then, Harriet, where people can find more details.
So my website is harrietwhaleycohen.com, and that's without the hyphen in my surname. Shall I spell it?
No, that's fine. I've got that. I can put it in the show notes. Excellent. And I really want to introduce you to the Hello Beautiful Foundation, if you haven't come across them before, because I'm working with them at the end of October on their, they've got a non-toxic breast cancer awareness month. In the UK, you know, there's lots of stuff goes on for breast cancer awareness in October, but a lot of it kind of tracks back to Big Pharma ultimately. And what Hello Beautiful Foundation are doing is something completely completely natural. The founder Jane had breast cancer, and now they offer workshops and all kinds of amazing things, Reiki and you know, lots of different sessions, yoga and gong baths and all kinds of things. So they're doing amazing work, and it's right in the center of Bloomsbury. So I must get you along there. I think you guys, you could
love that.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Let's connect you. So that would be great. I'm there on the 28th of October with Claire Pooley, author of The Sober Diaries. So that's going to be fun. So we'll connect you. Thank you so much, Harriet. It's just been absolutely amazing to be able to speak to you again.
Thank you. Always to talk. Yeah,
love it. Thanks a lot, and lots of love to your dog. What's her name again?
Fizzy. Fizzy. Yeah,
we enjoyed interviewing her too. Thank you.
Bye. All right.
Bye. Bye. So thanks to Harriet, and I just want to say a big up as well to our fabulous members in the Sober Club. Anybody's listening, we've closed the doors just for a bit. So we have our founder members, and we have a rocking Facebook community and some amazing stuff going on in the club. We've got we're doing a 7-day juice shot challenge at the moment, which is great fun. I mean, even if you're not into juicing, it's actually just really fun to just make a shot or a little mini smoothie, just to get some of that really good nutrition straight to your cells. Whatever kind of diet or whatever it is you're on, it doesn't do any harm to have a shot. So anyone can do this, of course. My recommendation would just be start with something really simple like a ginger shot, a ginger zinger, if you like. So you get half an apple, a chunk of ginger, kind of 2-3 centimeters of fresh ginger, of course, and maybe half a lemon, and then pop that through a juicer. You can use a blender if you've only got a blender, but make sure that if you do that, obviously you're going to need to strain it. You're going to make sure you need a high-speed blender so that it can work with fresh ginger, which can be quite hard. And then obviously strain off the bits, as it were, with a nut milk bag or in a sieve. And there's your ginger shot. And depending on how much ginger you use, it is super hot and super good for you, particularly at this time of the year when so many people have got colds. It's a great thing to boost your immunity. So I've got a blog post. If you go to thesoberclub.com, there's a blog post there on the lowdown on juicing. So if you're new to it all, have a look, because whatever stage you're at, whether you're just giving up the booze or whether you've been sober for years, I think it never hurts to give a little boost to your immunity, whatever else is going on. And for most of us, trying to actually get copious amounts of fruit and veg in can be quite hard some days. There's days go by when I realise I really haven't eaten well at all, even though despite banging on about it, I'm out and about and travelling, I'm grabbing stuff on the train and whatever. And I think, my goodness, I really have not had great nutrition straight to my cells today. So having a juice shot can be a really good start to the day, even if you don't manage enough good stuff the rest of the time, which of course I think you should try, but you know what I'm saying. So there's a blog post there. Just a reminder that we will be opening up the Sober Club for membership again in a while. So right now you can sign up to the waiting list, and we've got a new PDF of our guide, Self-Care in Sobriety. So you can sign up for that if you go to thesoberclub.com. Also, what's changed is that all of the podcasts are now available to listen for free on thesoberclub.com. So check out all the podcasts there. I've met a couple of people who are going back through all the archives and enjoying some of those podcasts, which is great. And also there's a bunch of blog posts there. So as I say, there's the article on juicing, if you're new to juicing, that's quite good there. And there's a bunch of other articles as well. And I am hoping, by the way, to get Jason Vale on the podcast, trying to persuade him to come on. He's real busy, as I'm sure you can imagine. What else have I got to tell you? I've got some really interesting guests coming up in the next few weeks, and I'm always open to your suggestions as well. And one of the things that's happened with doing the Sober Club is that I'm also offering one-to-one coaching. And it's really interesting how many of the same kinds of themes come up a lot, of course, as people are at the beginning of their journey or after they've been sober for a while. It's really interesting. I always find it fascinating how sometimes people can be, 3 years into being sober, and suddenly they'll get a trigger or a thought, and it will kind of send them back to where they were, and then they're starting to think again, oh, maybe I should drink again, maybe I can moderate now, maybe I can go back to drinking. And it's fascinating how these thoughts still come back and how we can deal with them. So we've got a lot in the Sober Club that talks about cravings and addictions and the way the brain works and how to change your behaviours, how to work with your brain to change your behaviours. Because one thing's for sure, the white knuckling it thing is really, really very kind of counterproductive, really. There's a few people who are doing, there's thousands of people, of course, doing Go Sober for October and actually doing a challenge specifically for a charity, and that's a fantastic thing to do. I've got a blog post about going sober for October on thesoberclub.com, and of course it's a fantastic thing to do, and it can be a great kickstart. If you're listening to this podcast and that's where you're at right now, you're doing the Sober for October month, it's a brilliant kickstart, and it makes it so much easier socially, because those around you, of course, are also not drinking, or many of them aren't, and it's a great, in inverted commas, excuse as to why you aren't drinking. So, and also you feel a sense of commitment and accountability, particularly if you're doing this for charity and you don't want to let anyone down. And all of those things are fantastic, and that's why I am a fan of these months, the Go Sober for October and the Dry January and all of that. However, I'm also a little bit wary of the attitude that can come with that, which is, you know, I'm just white knuckling it and counting the days till I get to the end of the month. And that feeling of I'm doing this because I've committed to a challenge. And then there's a little sense of, you know, I'm the kind of person that will do my challenge and I won't renege on it. And then the danger is that, you know, the word challenge in itself seems to suggest that something is hard. And I'm not saying it isn't hard, because it can be in the first few weeks. Of course it can. But actually, the point we want to get to is that you reframe your thinking so that, yes, you're going to go through these early stages of it being difficult, but actually you're doing this for a reason. And the reason is the outcome you want. And the outcome you want, hopefully, is to have freedom from alcohol, to be able to choose whether you want to drink or not. If you're someone who doesn't have an off switch, then that's going to be difficult if you're going to choose to moderate. If you are a mindful drinker and you're successfully moderating, then all good. But if, like me, you didn't have an off switch, or you don't, then and you're doing this challenge, then think ahead. Don't just kind of white knuckle it and go through this month constantly counting the days till it can end, because then you'll get to the end of the month and you'll be punching the air and say, yeah, look at the amount of money I raised. Now let me reward myself, in inverted commas, with you know, let me binge drink for a weekend because I did so well. I mean, that would just be such a huge waste of that month. I mean, yes, you may have raised money, but if you haven't changed your thinking, it's just such a wasted opportunity. So I just really urge you, if you are in the middle of a challenge, whether it's a Go Sober for October or a 90-day challenge or whatever challenge you're part of, to really use this time to reframe your thinking and just see if you can change your behaviours at a real sort of brain chemistry level. Think about what's going on. You know, there's a whole load of different factors, of course, but I'd really, really urge you to ask yourself, why do I want to do this? What is the outcome that I actually want? If the outcome that you want is literally to raise a bit of money, and then go back to drinking, well, all good. But if the outcome that you really want deep down is to actually have freedom from thinking about drinking all the time and drinking and feeling rubbish and waking up at 3 a.m. and all of the other stuff, if you want freedom from that, then you'll know that you need to do a little bit of extra stuff as well. And maybe you're in the middle of some other challenge. I don't know. Maybe you're ditching the sugar or the cigarettes or whatever. And actually, the same principles apply. They really do. It's about trying to work out what your wish is. What is it you want? Have a look at the blog post anyway that I've written on thesoberclub.com. So that's it for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you same time next week. And if you are doing this at whatever stage you're at, it is a thing. It's really a big thing. So be kind to yourself. And the self-care tip, by the way, I've done those for a few weeks. There you go. I've forgotten. But anyway, for this week, your self-care tip is be kind to yourself and get yourself a juice shot. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast. I'm Jenny Lee Grace. Please go to thesoberclub.com, listen to more podcasts, read our blogs, enter our competitions, grab yourself a free PDF, Self-Care in Sobriety, and check out our online community,